Do your dance. You can smile if you wanna. You can laugh if you wanna. But whatever you do, sing this song with me. La 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 la. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Town Talk Tampa Bay. I'm your host, Sharon Preston Falter, and today we are going to speak about a subject that we know is here, and we know that we are living with people on the autistic disorder spectrum, but we never really talk about it, and especially in the Black community. And I'm so happy that Kimberly Jackson, who is the executive director of the Institute for Strategic Policies Solutions at St. Petersburg College, is here to discuss this with me. But Kimberly is not only the executive director at ISPS. She is an attorney, a political analyst, a thought leader, and a parent. And she is devoted to her family. Good morning, Kimberly. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Thank you for the lovely introduction.
Well, it's all true. I just spoke what is. So, you know, you are definitely someone in the community, in the St. Petersburg area and Tampa Bay in general. And you are out there making things happen at your work, in your community, in your family, and I'm just really so thrilled that you are taking the time to be with me this morning.
Happy to do so. Very happy to do so, particularly since it's World Autism Awareness Month. Yesterday was actually World Autism Awareness Day, but Autism Awareness Month is the entire month of April, and it's always a great time to highlight the beauty and depth of the population who lives with ASD or Autism Spectrum Disorder.
Yeah, so give us more information about ASD. You know, we have an idea, but we really, you know, and especially me, and so I'm speaking for myself, and so I would just like you just to speak on what that looks like in our lives, in our families, or could look like.
Absolutely. I want to be clear that there's always usually doctors or physicians or therapists or psychologists, and I'm going to just speak from the space of the parent, what I experienced.
Mm-hmm.
I have two daughters, and so I was well aware when my second daughter exhibited signs that were different from my typical daughter. And they were just neurally typical different ways. So she actually spoke very early and had very clear ability to speak, but she wasn't responding to questions. So, for example, you would say, what would you like for your birthday? And she would say, my birthday is, and give the date. She wouldn't look me in the eyes. She was very sensitive to touch and extremely sensitive to noises. I would say in terms of sounds, it was like everything was filtered in. Everyday sounds that we ignore, like birds chirping or airplanes going by or the humming of a fluorescent light, unless it was, you know, something that she could filter out easily, it was almost like it was stereo sound in her head. And so, in general, I would say that if I had to describe it broadly, a person who has ASD typically is like a foreigner in their own land, meaning they can, you know, order food, they can work, they can shop, they can live functionally, but they're speaking a different language. And so her language is a communication space. Everything is going on fine inside, but how it exhibits out from a communication space makes it a challenge to the world. And typically, unlike other individuals with special needs where it's not so visible, for example, if you're in a wheelchair, an average person has empathy and knows to adjust their behavior towards them. The same with some of the other special needs that are of exterior in nature. So with someone with ASD, it's very hard to identify them. They don't really generally have any physical characteristic that would let you know that they're autistic. And as a result, you don't know how to engage with them. And also I would say this, it's a spectrum for the reason, like a rainbow.
Mm-hmm.
You can have someone who is high-functioning in some areas but low-functioning in the others, or, someone who is completely locked inside. So it's important to really understand that when you've met one person with autism, you have simply met one person. You may not be able to use that same skill set with another person because they're so individualized in how they present. I hope that answered your question.
Oh, absolutely. and as especially when you clarified that, you described the spectrum as a rainbow. So, one person
Absolutely.
With autism is one person with autism. And that's really important to note because I have met several people with autism and, I know that there's a difference, but I never really identify it or think that. You know, I just kind of put it all in one bucket and it's so not the way.
Yeah, I can give a perfect example. So my daughter particularly has it's a sensory sound issue with her. So she's very high-functioning, but if she's in an environment where the sounds are not sensory-pleasing, it can set her off. And so you could be with her hours, days, years, and never see that, and then see it once. And then you see the difference between a typical teenage reaction to something versus an autistic reaction. One of her good friends has extreme sensitivity to touch. And I forget that sometimes because, as human beings, we want to touch.
Right.
And, as she's gotten older, she has reminded me, remember, do not touch me. And so, but there's nothing wrong with her hearing. In terms of their capabilities, a lot of them just thrive in a particular area and take a deep dive into it. My daughter is extremely musical. She sings beautifully. She plays music by instruments by ear. It's very strange to my husband and I because, she won't pick up something for a very long time, and then the next thing you know, she is working out a song that she's, singing in her head and playing it via ear. She loves to communicate through theater. I think it's a natural fit because if you think about a play is very rote. You're learning the same, script every time, and you're perfecting it, and you're able to get the nuance. So you see a lot of people who are talented in that area. I do a newsletter where this last month I highlighted people who may have been some people who have acknowledged that they are autistic and some people that it's perceived over time because of historical records that they were likely autistic. And one that I found very interesting over this past month was Dan Aykroyd, who really talked about his ability to not understand his creativity until he did Ghostbusters, which was very strange. So you never know also if there's a light area of the spectrum where a person just didn't identify it. And if you think about the school system, how we teach now is drastically different than how we taught in the past. So how we address this population that's growing is different as well.
Well, one thing about the school system is I don't feel that teachers, for the most part, are really looking to see or identify a child as autistic. A lot of times they'll identify the child as having a behavioral issue.
I always say at this point I tread lightly since I'm an educator myself. So I'll use an example first. I'm an attorney, and I always tease my friend that does work comp that I hate work comp. I'm capable of doing it. I would have never done it. You couldn't have paid me to do it. So a lot of our educators, of course, with Golden Heart, were not trained properly because it was not their desire to go into the area of special needs. And so we have a typical general population, and now all of a sudden, although they have the capability, they may not have the tools, the recent tools in their toolkit to deal with it. And then unfortunately, because autistic kids tend to not present until around like second or third grade, because if you think about it, most kids are doing the same thing in terms of how they heard in their early years, and they start differentiating between first and third grade drastically. That's when you see those behavioral challenges, but they're not behavioral challenges. Instead, that, you know, I would just ask people to consider it like a communication issue. If you don't understand something and people are talking at you rapidly and you're required to adjust in a manner that you cannot absorb, then your natural reaction is to not be helpful in the process of understanding what is happening. So in a classroom environment, you learn typically from surrounding cues. But if an autistic person does not absorb those cues because they're not capable of absorbing those cues, and an educator or class is moving really fast. I always, again, give another example. I talk really fast. With my daughter, I don't. I adjust because she needs time to process what I'm saying before she responds. So those challenges that look like behavioral challenges are not necessarily behavioral challenges. They are adjustments to, I can't function in this classroom. So if I'm antsy and I'm on the spectrum and I need to move a lot, it's hard to ask a student to sit still or the, you know, breadth of a classroom. If I have problems focusing and I need to be in a sensory area that's friendly to me, but how someone smells or the noise of the lights or the disruption of what paper sounds like is disrupting my space, then I may not be attentive or able to adjust quickly. If transitioning from classroom to classroom is a challenge because of the depth of hurting in most schools from space to space, then not adjusting and letting that student leave early can be a challenge. So there are a lot of different ways and reasons that create issues in the classroom that I wouldn't necessarily attribute, which is hard, to behavioral challenges, but I also give grace to the educators who have some, you know, issues identifying them and then have to also teach to a general population. I would also add this, too, with the autistic population, being around a positive behavioral support is what, you know, at least I was trained by the team of exceptional people who have helped my daughter thrive. Mm-hmm. Positive behavioral support changes their lives because they sort of adapt to the environment that they're in. So if you have them in an environment where you're reinforcing, of course, behavior that is typical, then that's helpful. And I always like to try to tell people that, you know, regardless of how you feel about the issue, we are going into a workspace where we're going to have a lot of individuals aging into the employment area or into college. And we have to find a way to interact with this differing dynamic group and highlight what they're excellent at and use that within the workforce rather than focusing on what their challenges are, finding a better placement for them, if you will.
Yeah, and I hear what you're saying about, you know, the teachers and giving them grace. And so it really comes back to hopefully at home where the parent can identify it before the child gets to school. And I know for you, you were able to identify your child and not have someone else outside of your family identify her.
Yes, I was was very lucky. So, I also attribute this to life just got too busy. So before I embark on that story, you know, when I was young, my mom was a vice president of a hospital, and life was different, right? Although she was busy and she was a single parent, when she came home, I had quality time over quantity time, right? Because there were no such thing as an email. People respected calling you after 9 o'clock. Your work, social, and personal family life did not merge. Now we live in a society where all that is going on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Parents can't adjust that quickly. It's just, you know, it's a village issue before I move forward. But I was blessed. My mother is a nurse by trade, and she did not exactly know how to say it because she couldn't, you know, my daughter was 2 or 3 at the time. Mm-hmm. She just said, this is my gut feeling. This is what I believe it is. And it doesn't matter if I'm wrong, and it's something similar in terms of a communication disorder, starting early, because the brain, you know, just expands so rapidly before the age of 12 or 13. Now's the time to do it all. So speech therapy, occupational therapy, behavioral therapy, physical therapy, you know, consulting with a neuropsychologist, getting a good grasp of where her deficits were so that we could strengthen those areas, testing that in the real world. I mean, our occupational therapist, when it just got overwhelmingly expensive, because that's another issue. I mean, the average family, if they don't have resources or cannot access government resources, spends between $65,000 to $80,000 a year accessing these resources on these therapies. Occupational therapists, you know, gave advice like canine therapy, equine therapy, aqua therapy, engaging her in sports where she is a single, she has to rise and fall on her own, but she's still surrounded by people and learns the social skills, like gymnastics and tennis and golf, swimming and music. Mm-hmm. And so I do think that, you know, we have to, as a society, we have to be a better village to try to not feel, make the parent feel more overwhelmed than they are, if you will. I have a very supportive family, and I've been able to navigate it, but I always tell parents, I feel the exact same way you do. I may have a little bit of tougher skin because I've chose to be completely transparent about this journey. But there are days where people stare at you, where people smirk, where they just think that you have a wayward or poorly disciplined child, where you don't know how what's going to go down if you go to a restaurant that is new to your autistic loved one, and, you know, you don't know how they're going to react. I often go to a place and scope it out first. Mm-hmm. For sensory challenges, to see where we can sit. I often tell waiters and staff and receptionists, and when we travel to the hotel and on the plane, you know, I have to explain that to them. I remember the first time when she started looking older and we were traveling and the officers were trying to, you know, shoo her through, and they, you know, they weren't doing anything wrong. But my daughter panicked because she had been used to following me through the, you know, through security. And I had to stop and explain and say, I'm so sorry to hold up this line. But, you know, we can have a bigger problem if we shove her through and not explain to her step by step what's happening. So a lot of, you know, I guess the space and breath, it's a team effort between educators while they're in the system, between caregivers who have to support families, which, you know, can create an extreme burnout, in between, again, the broader society of what we think about everyday living, going to the grocery store, going to the bank, traveling, going to restaurants. Those things are what we do every day when we get out of school, right, when we decide to live our life. And those are the things that I'm really passionate about, is teaching the autistic population how to thrive in a community rather than enforcing isolation.
So for families that do not have the means, because as you said, you know, it takes a village and it takes a lot of resources, and some of these resources can be very costly. What are some of the ways that parents who do not have the means can find the support that they need?
Well, I do think in the Bay Area generally, and I'm not in your area, I'm in, of course, Pinellas County, mm-hmm. that the municipalities have wonderful park and rec programs. That most of the municipalities have programs specifically targeted to the ASD population. And so you should always start with your city or county to see what resources are free and available for outdoor recreational and social outings. Because that's the biggest challenge, the teaching the social space when there's no one to be around socially. That's the hard part. Having an advocate, most, again, I'm talking about Pinellas County, but most school boards have an ESE advocate that sits on the school board, mm-hmm. and it's that person's job to support the parent in terms of trying to figure out how they navigate, whether they should get a 504 plan, which is a legal document that allows them to get support in the school, or an IEP plan, which is an individual education plan that details and outlines how to best address a student's needs. A lot of these resources are actually on the websites for the different school boards. I would also ask for the good grace of attorneys. We have a lot of local bar associations who do pro bono work. Unfortunately, there are not a lot of special needs educators in the field in our state. However, there are some who in the bar association can help, you know, support and tell you where to go. I would also say, like, I sit on the board, full disclosure, called COPA. It's the Council of the Parents, Attorneys, and Advocates for Those with Disabilities. It's for all disabilities, but there are a lot of resources on the website, and parents can join for a nominal value to hook in and connect with other parents who have similar stories, and they need that support. A lot of the hospitals do what's called PALS program. And those programs are sort of like, you know, social programs to teach your child how to acclimate, whether it's just walking through the hospital and introducing yourself, or how you get on and off an elevator without fear or trepidation, how you engage when you're on it. Some of these resources are for young kids. And then as they get older, there are resources like Autism Shifts. That's led by Vicki Westra, who is a former executive herself, who decided to go into the field to teach the older population, employment skills to transition out. So there are a ton of resources out there. It is how you engage and how you want to do. Over COVID, I recently started blogging and sharing my story, mm-hmm. and I started doing monthly newsletters to just push out this information I would have wanted to know when I was in the midst of it, because there are ebbs and flows. You know, I remember panicking about everything probably till she was around age 9 or 10. I would carry this binder around, and her doctor would say, well, the binder is getting thicker, so I think the mom is doing better. Because I always had a notepad. And then one day, Emerson took over the conversation. She started asking questions herself. And it was overwhelming. I was like, okay. She took over the conversation. She started asking the questions herself. And that was a blessing to me to see transition of advocacy from where I was to, you know, where she is. And the truth is, as much as we focus on everyone else but the person with ASD, it's their lives, and we have to teach them how to be their best selves in a society that may not understand or get them. And that is from law enforcement to everything. So there are resources out there. I would, thankfully, we are blessed with having, you know, a computer at most people's fingertips all the time. I would literally just put in acronyms and learn the acronyms and Google them and make sure you go into any session with anything, anyone informed. And, you know, I would say one more thing. Ask them if you don't understand. I would always say, I'm an attorney. I didn't go to school to be a psychologist, a neurologist. Right. A therapist. I went to school to practice law. Speak to me in my language. Treat me, speak to me on a kindergarten level. Let me understand what I'm making a decision about for my child.
And that's so key, because a lot of times people will be overwhelmed and intimidated and just not ask the questions, you know, feel that they can't ask the questions and act like they do understand when they really don't. So that leads to frustration, you know. And that's not necessary. So how is your daughter doing?
My daughter's great. She's great. You know, like I said, I have my website. It's KimberlyGJackson.com. I have our full story on there. You know, COVID has been hard. It's been hard on many families like mine because, you know, in general, they experience isolation. But with COVID, it's extreme isolation. And having virtual therapies, of course, are helpful, but not as impactful as, you know, one-on-one face-to-face or in a climate that's helpful. that has been hard on all families, including ours. But, you know, the good news is that she's just doing incredible because, you know, we put the work in, and now I don't regret a time of leaving my law practice to transition to education. I think, and I would like the time to really thank the many, many people in the field, the industry, from accessibility services to neurologists to attorneys who are my peers that practice in special needs to doctors who helped me really navigate this area. And I would say that there are a lot of friendly people out there who, when you ask, they will give you what you need.
Well, that's good to hear. And, you know, as you said, it does take a village, and your family is there. And as a family, you have another daughter, and it's the girls get along very well, which is, you know, very heartwarming and great to hear.
Well, I would say that my older daughter is been the biggest blessing to my younger daughter because they're sisters. I'm an only child. So sometimes I'm like, what are y'all fighting about now? But that has helped because it is a total normal,
that's normal
sibling relationship.
That's right.
And that she requires my younger daughter to, you know, be on her game if she's not giving her a break. So mm-hmm. I guess that's typical for siblings. I don't have one. But
well, I'm an only child myself, so I don't have that either. But when they have that, you know, and they're kind of what it's like, iron sharpens iron. You know, they
yes.
You know, there's a love there, but they keep each other on their toes. And I've seen the pictures of them smiling. I think they're doing okay.
They are.
So, as I mentioned at the top of the hour, you're a very busy lady, but really steeped in community advocacy work. Tell us a little bit about that before we go, and please let people know how they can get your blog. Again, give your website address.
Okay. Well, again, thank you for the lovely introduction. I do community work because I want the village to be stronger for when my daughter is an adult, and I may not be able to do as much as I'm doing now. And I stand on the shoulders of my family, who my grandfather was a minister, and he did good work because, you know, that's what God required of him. And so I work with the Academy Prep, which is a school in South St. Pete that helps kids 5 through 8 make sure that they have everything they need to compete in the world. I sit on the board of the YMCA. I sit on the St. Pete Arts Alliance. And I sit on the St. Petersburg Free Clinic here, as well as COPA. All of those different nonprofit organizations help our community, I believe, to be a little bit stronger. In terms of my work, I work for the Institute for Strategic Policy Solutions, as we call ISPS. You can find us at isps.spcollege.edu. Right now, we have our autism program on for the entire month. But if they go to our event tab, we have all of our past programs. It was created by Congressman Bill Young as a way to have nonpartisan, strong discussions on social, political, and economic issues, and to inform and educate and enhance the public. So we're very grateful for being able to have that type of input into the community that is not just for our college, but for the Florida college system and for the entire community. And finally, you know, with my advocacy, my website is KimberlyGJackson.com. And on it, if you go to the newsletter section or publications or the blog, you'll see my specific advocacy related to autism. And I just want to take you the time to share and enlighten the public about autism. You mentioned in the beginning families of color, and that's important for me too. One of the real reasons I got into everything is because, you know, there would be my Spanish brothers and sisters and people who have English as a second language, and all of them experiencing the same level of challenges with autism. And sometimes our pride as communities of colors will prohibit us from being able to access the resources that we need. And what I found in many cases is that I was one of the singular people in the room, and I was just trying to push out the information and try to understand why it was like that. You know, it all boils down to equity. I think our society has to be very honest about equitable challenges, and that's the best that we can do.
Well, Kimberly, you will be back to talk about the autism spectrum disorder as well as ISPS. Thank you so much for being my guest today.